Life.
Table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Justice.
Justice. Justice.
Justice. Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy.
Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Fair.
Right.
Love.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake. Let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
country,
expression,
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 participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
work,
leisure,
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 health,
education,
progress,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Welcome to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever across the globe you may be, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly from Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, by Amnesty International volunteers Jim Hutchings and Mona Hill, who are a part of a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're working to build a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. You may have noticed we have a new theme song. It is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It was written and performed by REM, as well as a collection of artists from around the world to celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. My name is Jim Hutchings, and my co-host, Mona Hill. And with the provincial election looming, we once again are directing our attention to one of the most pressing human rights issues many are facing in Saskatchewan, that of homelessness. Today, we welcome guests Elena Harrison of the Carmichael Outreach in Regina and Riley Moynes, film producer and director. Riley and Elena worked on a film short titled Bridging the Gap. This film was created to highlight some of the problems with low-income housing in Regina, Saskatchewan, where we find one of the lowest vacancy rates in Canada at 0.7%. This film aims to start a dialogue between the landlords and the government in order to curb the rise in homelessness.
Welcome back, everyone. Happy to be here at Human Rights Radio. And welcome, Elena and Riley.
Hello, how are you? Thank you. Hi.
It's good to have you. So Riley Moynes is a native of Regina, and you developed a passion for film after you were given your first video camera as a 10-year-old.
Yep.
And since then, you pursued a career in film and video production, and you worked with people of all ages and backgrounds. And recently, besides producing this film, Bridging the Gap, right?
Yep.
You also produced and co-directed a music video for Def 3, an up-and-coming hip-hop artist, and expanded your repertoire to include commercial and documentary productions. You've most recently received a Premier's Award for Excellence in Public Service for your video work at the Saskatchewan Pavilion during the Vancouver 2010 Olympics. That was quite a gig, I bet.
Oh, yeah. It was the time of my life, I'd have to say, for sure.
Wonderful. And Elena Harrison is a housing support coordinator at Carmichael Outreach in Regina. It's a community-based organization in Regina, and your job is to provide basic housing help to clients. As a part of Saskatchewan's HIV strategy, also, you'll be working closely to find housing and offer supports to people living with HIV/AIDS. You've been involved in housing and homelessness issues for the last 2 years, and you've been part of a working group that put on a series of coffee houses on the topic of homelessness in Regina. This is just blossoming and blossoming. There have been so many public events on homelessness. I don't know if we see any changes as a result of that yet or not.
Well, I think people are starting to get that the problem is coming. It's come to Regina. People tend to think of homelessness as a big city thing, and unfortunately, it's not. It's here.
Right. And some of that research has come from the work that you've done on pandemic planning for homeless populations, mm-hmm. and work on the 2010 HIFAS, which is HIFAS means Homeless Individuals and Families Information Services. And that was a report on homelessness. I understand what HIFAS is because I used to work in a men's hostel.
Oh,
and I used HIFAS
yes.
all the time. So this is how, for those of you who are listening who don't know what this means, is every hostel of any kind or any housing, public housing for emergency services keeps a national, like a survey of who stays there, and there are statistics that they keep so that we can keep track. And this is why we know, or we have a generalized idea of how many people are homeless. Mm-hmm. Those are the ones only that go to the shelters.
Yeah.
We don't have recordings of those who don't go to shelters.
Yeah, it's the best indicator we can get right now.
Right. And I guess I might add also, you know, I'm talking about Regina having this homelessness issue, but it's not just our city. The whole province is having a problem, and
Absolutely.
This is something you highlighted, I think, a bit in your film, too. So what I'd like to do is, this was a wonderful film, Bridging the Gap, and Jim and I went to see it at the university about a week ago, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we took some clips from it, and we thought we'd play a few clips. So if you would like to play those first two clips that we talked about, Jim, and then it's Elena basically trying to find housing for people and the results that she ended up with during those phone calls.
Maybe before we start the clips, maybe Elena can explain a little bit about what I asked her to do and what I guess the process is for creating the list which we use to call people to find housing. So maybe she can explain a little bit.
Sure. Part of the work that I do as the housing support coordinator is to help put together a list of available low-cost housing rental properties. And so what we did was we used that list and went through it to try and see how many positive answers we would get that might be places that our clients could rent. Now we went through, it was about 30 numbers once we pared it down from all the available places that we cut out because they're a bunch because they're too expensive, a bunch because we know they don't rent to people on social assistance, others that say, you know, we only rent to people who work. And so once we go through that process, we're left with a much shorter list. And out of that, we found, I think, two people that
people that would actually contemplate renting to someone on social assistance. And how many pages did we... Do we have to start off with, like, at least 15
Maybe
to 20?
Maybe we could hear the film clips, and then
sure.
we could talk about
Sure,
that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, hi there. My name's Elena Harrison. I'm calling from Carmichael Outreach. I was just calling about the bachelor apartment you have advertised.
I'm sorry, my dear. It was taken.
It's taken. Okay. I'm just calling about your basement apartment that you have advertised.
No, it's been rented.
Oh, it's been rented already. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Hello?
Oh, hi there. I'm just calling about the one-bedroom apartment you have advertised. Is that still available?
No. Oh. It's, I rented it yesterday.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Thanks anyways.
Okay. Thanks,
bye.
Hello?
Oh, hi there. I'm just calling about the one-bedroom apartment you have advertised.
Actually, it's gone. Sorry.
Oh, it's gone already? Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, bye.
So out of 30, you said 30 calls you made, you ended up with two available apartments.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that go after that?
Well, after that, we just kind of, usually what the process is that, I mean, this isn't typically how it goes. We wanted to just go through and see what luck we would have. But after that, you know, if we find places that look like they might actually rent to the people that we work with, then we would tell them about it and say, hey, these look like they might be a real possibility. Let's check into them.
Right.
And just because they look like they might be a possibility doesn't at all mean that they're going to get them. I mean, if they don't have strong references, if they've been somehow blacklisted for something that they've done in the past, then the chances are
gone. They're not necessarily going to get that apartment.
Yeah.
Right. So references are a big deal.
Absolutely.
For people renting, for landlords.
When okay. we went through the process of doing the interviews with landlords, for everybody that I talked to, landlord references were their number one criteria that they based their decision on whether they would rent to somebody mm-hmm. or not. If they didn't have at least one, preferably two, stellar references, they're just not going to rent to the person.
What about someone who's been living with family members? Would they accept references from family members?
Generally, no.
Okay.
We heard a lot of no's with regards to references from family members. It's, I guess, because some people will, you know, get their family members to vouch for them when they're actually not a good renter,
mm-hmm.
tenant, I guess.
What constitutes a good renter? Do all landlords have the same criteria?
Well... They do all have the same criteria that it has to be somebody with a good landlord reference. But I would say that of the ones that we spoke to, some are a lot more willing to rent to people who are not working. So that would be possibly people who are social assistance mm-hmm. recipients. Others won't rent to somebody who doesn't have a paying job.
And that was a major focus of the film, wasn't it?
Yes.
People on assistance having problems with renting.
Yes.
And as we talked about this a little bit after the film mm-hmm. at the university last week, there were a number of people who had comments to make that it's a problem renting when you don't have a job, when you're on assistance, and really it is a human rights violation for a landlord to refuse to rent you a home because you're on assistance.
Yeah.
How do you deal with these situations?
That's something that has come up time and time again, and it's hard. Sometimes the wording is a little bit tricky to get around. Just blatantly saying we don't rent to people who are receiving social assistance. Oftentimes you'll see in ads, we'll only accept somebody who's working, or things like we require. A reference from your workplace. Another way that they go about doing it is saying that we only accept cash security deposits, which if you're on social assistance, they don't provide cash security deposits. So if you're not able to come up with that on your own, then you're going to be at a very big disadvantage.
Right, and that was a problem as well, was mm-hmm. the security deposit. There was a landlord in the film who talked about that being a problem.
Yeah, actually, all of the landlords that we spoke to very much dislike the way that social services deals with providing. Well, what they do is they provide a letter saying that if there are damages caused to this property, when the tenant moves out, we promise that we will honor the amount that we give them for the shelter allowance. So this is up to a maximum of whatever they're eligible for. Very often that's not the full amount of the security deposit that's asked for, which is generally 1 month's rent. So they don't like the way that this goes. They don't like the fact that it doesn't come with any actual money. They've had some trouble claiming it. They say that the amount of time they have to claim it isn't sufficient, and that it just never, the amount is not enough to ever cover damages if they do mm-hmm. occur.
We showed the letter actually in the film. Jim let us scan. Jim, a guy who was in the film, let us scan his letter of guarantee, and it's just a, you know, it resides on a computer. They just change the name of the landlord and the tenant, and the amount of the damage deposit. They print it and they send it to the landlord, and it, you know,
so what
it has no value, really. I guess
I was going to say what I'm hearing is it's not necessarily something that they will always honor. That social assistance will honor.
The landlords have repeatedly, and you see that in the film, told us that you know, they have a hard time claiming it. They have to go to court sometimes. And sometimes social services actually will cancel the letter of guarantee. I'm not sure. I think Sean said that if somebody moves into a place with a letter of guarantee and then goes off assistance, they'll actually cancel the letter of guarantee. So at that point, the landlord or the property manager actually has to go track down the tenant to get their cash for the security deposit. So there's a number of problems with the way that social services handles the letter of guarantee. And, yeah, it's just something that I guess landlords see as a burden and a wall to renting to people on social assistance.
So it sounds like there's barriers on both sides. There's barriers for the renter, and there's barriers for some landlords as well.
That's exactly it.
They need more houses like this. 'Cause I was told the waiting list is long. Like when we wake up in the morning, we don't want to be cold. We want to be warm like how we are now. You know, and I think everybody deserves that.
Well, we when we went, I asked Elena to, I said we need to have some characters in the film that the audience will be able to connect with. All right, so I had Elena choose some clients from Carmichael who I asked her if they would be good on camera, if they would tell their story convincingly and really get to the heart of the matter, I guess. So we chose Eunice, and yeah, she proved to really be able to explain her situation well, and she was unique because she was already living in social housing. So that's why we wanted to talk to her.
And I happen to know the woman myself.
Oh, dear.
And I know that she's an incredible advocate.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. And when she says that, I was told the waiting list is long.
Yep.
This is an ongoing problem, that the waiting list is long. People that I work with in my job as well are being told, you know, even with people with children in particular, this is, for me, is the most bothersome, yes. Is people with children who are living in homes with eight other people, mm-hmm. and the children are sleeping on cots on the floor or mats on the floor, and mom is sleeping on the couch, and mom is trying to maybe go to work every day or trying to get her education. And
it certainly isn't a way that people should be living.
Exactly.
No.
And the waiting lists are up to a year long with public housing.
Do you remember what Eunice told us, Elena, about being put forward on the list? She said you basically have to call and use your kids to I guess manipulate yourself to the top of the list, because you know, if you're fighting for your kids and you know, to be able to live in a decent place, you have to do what you have to do, I guess.
Well, and I can relate to that because I advocated for a client, oh, probably about 5 or 6 months ago, and this was a very serious situation. They were living in an unsafe situation. We went to Regina Housing and we talked about this, and they were put at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
it still hasn't happened because no one is moving. And this is goes back to the problem of lack of housing.
Absolutely.
No one is moving. And, you know, you use the term manipulation, right? About using your kids to manipulate.
I guess maybe that's
but
not
this is just,
the right
this
term.
This is just a common fact, right? That when you have children have to have a healthy, safe place to live in. You can't come home and plan a meal for yourself and your children when there's 7 or 8 other people in the house.
Yeah.
You can't use your little limited funds, right, to do that.
Very true.
Well, it comes back to what Mark Spooner, Dr. Mark Spooner, told us in the film, and that's he bases a lot of this off the housing first model, where you know, one needs to be housed in appropriate living conditions before they're able to flourish as a human and to learn and grow appropriately. So.
You're absolutely right.
And I just wanted to say, you know, it's a huge problem for families, for single mothers with children, and I know that there's a huge waiting list for them. And the other thing is that there's a huge waiting list for single people, too. I'm working with somebody in particular right now, and I just kind of wanted to make an example of her case. I know that she is homeless. She has absolutely no home. She's been staying in a few shelters. Right now she's part of the Occupy Regina movement.
Yes, it's getting bigger and bigger.
That's
and
right.
Bigger because there is tents available. There's safety
absolutely.
There for the people who are homeless.
Absolutely. She gets some warm meals, and she has a sense of camaraderie with mm-hmm. the others there. But she's on the list, to get into Regina housing right now. And they said, well, we do put people who we know are homeless at the top of the list. Well, you know, who knows? Who knows how long that's going to be?
Right.
So that not even being homeless gets you a place right away.
Right. Riley, why was it important for you to make this film? Why was homelessness an issue for you? You could have chosen so many things to make a film about.
I think that it's a very poignant subject. I think it's important for people to understand that there's, you know, Regina is kind of a safe place. You know, I guess when one thinks about Regina, and I grew up in a, you know, well-off family. We, you know, I was always had a place to stay, obviously. My house is always warm, filled with food. My parents are loving and everything. And I just, I thought, well, I should step outside my comfort zone here and really cover a topic that is not well understood by my friends, by some of my colleagues, by lots of people that I know, and I think that we've opened some eyes here. Hopefully, I guess that's the point of the film, to start
what
a dialogue.
What kind of feedback did you get from your friends and family?
Well, actually, very, very good feedback. I've had some friends. You know, I'm big on Twitter. I like to at Living Sky Media. Follow me. Send in your questions and comments. But yeah, no, like we use social media a lot to get the word out about the film, and I think that's driven people to watch it. But it's also a forum to allow people to comment, and the comments are overwhelmingly positive. And I've got some friends who are landlords. You know, young blossoming landlords with only a couple of properties, and they tell me that they don't. You know, this is eye opening for them. They don't ever have to deal with these sorts of situations. They have houses in South Regina,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, they just said it's very important to tell this story and allow people to see what's actually happening. Yeah, just everybody I've talked to has just really enjoyed it, and they've thought that it's definitely brought the subject to the forefront.
Wonderful. Okay, then I'm going to make some announcements before we take a break
sure.
and come back and continue with our conversation on the topic of homelessness and housing. November 22nd. And Elena, you said there was something else happening too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah,
yes.
this afternoon.
This afternoon, yeah.
Yeah, there's a social worker and advocate coming to give a talk and have sort of a discussion on the housing crisis in Regina. And this is happening this afternoon at 1:30 at Knox Metropolitan United Church downtown.
So if you want to find out more about what's going on with this, show up this afternoon. There's also something happened November 22nd, and that is National Housing Day. And it's a day of action. And from 9 a.m. at Victoria Park in Regina, there's a march to the legislature to start at 10 a.m. And this event is being organized by the Social Work Student Society at the University of Regina in conjunction with the Red Tent Campaign. It includes some folks sleeping overnight in Victoria Park on November 21st. I imagine they'll be joining the occupation. Mm-hmm. And the rest of us will congregate at 9 a.m. at the park and then march to the legislature for 10 a.m. And this is good timing because it's just before our election, our provincial election. There will be speakers and a proclamation, and the goal of the event is to bring awareness to the housing crisis, and it is a crisis, and the issue of homelessness in our city and province, and to put pressure on the federal government to create a federal housing initiative.
From my home, I can't turn back now, it's too late, living like a rolling stone. And I hear my baby calling from a flatland town, I wish I could hold her tight, but we're miles apart and the sun's going down, so I'm sleeping alone. Thank you.
sun's getting low. But every train that comes rolling on by tells me to just jump on and go. Cause baby, can you hear me? I am lost without you. Baby, can you hear me? I am so lost. Baby, can you hear me? I am lost.
Are we back?
Yes, we are.
This is Human Rights Radio. Mm-hmm. I'm Mona Hill, and I'm with my co-host, Jim Hutchings. And today we're talking about housing again and homelessness. This is a topic that's not going away. And in case you weren't here at the beginning of the hour, we are here with Riley Moines, who's a filmmaker. And he and Elena Harrison of Carmichael Outreach, which is an organization that works with people who live on the street, people who live in poverty, people who need advocacy and help. And they made a film called Bridging the Gap. And the film is about homelessness and people who live on assistance and difficulties that they have, barriers they have, finding places to live, barriers that are actually there for landlords. A lot of people don't think there are, but apparently there are. So we wanted to, and we're listening to some clips from the film. If you wanted to play clip number 7, Jim, 7 and 8 I think would be really good, and then we can have some conversation about this.
I lived there for a couple of years, and then keeping up with the times, the mortgage and stuff like that, the rent went up to 800, and I couldn't afford it. When I got this letter that said my rent was going up, I sat there and thought, I may as well buy a tent because I can't afford the rent.
I can't deal with not having the rent on time anymore.
Okay.
41% of Regina renters pay over half of their income in rent. If you pay 30% of your income in for rental costs, that's about what we consider to be affordable.
Okay, and the one thing I want to say before you guys discuss it is just this morning at my place of work, a coworker is working with young people trying to help them learn how to budget their money. And the program that he's using, the information he's using from a few years ago, was stating that 22% of your income should go towards your housing. 22%, and that's just a few years old. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it and I went, holy cow. Have times change? And then I told him about the film.
Yep, that's what Mark says, is 30% is the line, and if you start crossing that, then you know you're getting into a situation where you're spending too much money on housing.
And there's a situation right now where there's I think it's over 40% of renters right now are paying more than 50% of their income for housing right now, which is a big problem.
There are people who will say that, well, there's other programs available to them, like mm-hmm. there's rental supplements, but that's only for families, right? So if you're a single person, you can't apply for a rental supplement.
If you have a disability, there are rental supplements mm-hmm. for people who are considered to be unemployable because of disability. But again, none of these supplements are guaranteed. And you don't know whether you're going to get one or how much you're going to get until you're into the place. And so it's money that's hard to count on.
So you're not
sure.
Even guaranteed until you move in.
Well, the place has to be up to a certain code. And if it's not, then the supplement won't be given.
Also, we talk in the film a little bit about people having to actually piece together their rent from a few other different supplements. What were those again?
Oh, well, you know, there's people who, so we have the shelter allowance that people are allotted.
And what is that shelter allowance?
It depends on what your living situation is. It, you know, there's a certain rate for single employable people. There's a rate for single unemployable people. There's rates for families, and it's dependent on how many kids you have.
Do those rates match the housing prices right now, the rental prices?
Absolutely not.
Not even close.
For the one that we use probably most at a Carmichael, because we're dealing with a lot of people who actually are homeless, living in shelters or sleeping in the detox center down the street, or actually a lot of people who are actually sleeping rough outside. The number that we use a lot is for the single unemployable category, and currently that's at $459.
So where do you rent in Saskatchewan for $450 a month?
I'm lucky. My parents own my house, and they charge us $350. My two roommates and me, but I really don't know. A lot of the people I know rent for, you know, $600, $650 a month, and that's like some on the lower end of what I've heard. Yeah, it's rough out there right now.
I think the answer is that you can't live by yourself. You're going to have to find a roommate. You're going to have to rent a room in a place, because if you're looking for a bachelor right now, you're not going to find one for that much.
From what I understand in the last couple of months with trying to help people that I know, we're looking at approximately $800 a month for even a bachelor suite.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's sharing a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
$800.
The average price right now, according to CMHE, Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, is $829 a month.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
So how many people end up living in situations that are dangerous for them because they can't leave?
I think a lot. I know that a lot of the women's shelters are up to capacity right now. And so.
And there's no waiting list.
No,
yeah,
it's just call back if and we'll see if we can get you in later. But if they can't get into a shelter, people are going to stay in those situations.
What the general voting public has to understand is that it costs less money to put people into, a housing situation, for example, an apartment or a house, even with roommates, than it does to... allow people to stay in detox or in the hospital or in jail even. You know, the amount of money spent per day on living in a hospital or, you know, staying in a hospital, having a bed in a hospital, being put in jail, whatever, detox, it's actually more money to allow these people to stay there than it is to actually just put them in a place.
Right.
So we're spending more money
housing
people than we should be, you know.
Have you talked to anybody from the city about responsibility, civic responsibility to the citizens in the city of Regina or the city of Saskatoon? Or do you just see this as a provincial issue?
That's a good question. I think that primarily this is a provincial issue. I would love to have more involvement from the city. There are certain people that do work in the city that are really advocates, that are behind the cause, and that's so wonderful to see. But I'd love to see more leadership coming out of City Hall on this issue. For instance, we have a something that we'll be working on a little bit down the road through Carmichael is asking the city to take a leadership role through the homeless partnering strategy. There's a program coming up where the decision is going to be made on where funds are going, and this has been managed very successfully in other centers by the municipal government, and we're going to very strongly encourage them to take that one leadership role, and I think it would be a really meaningful one. But
I want to jump in here and tell you, I was in Edmonton a couple of weekends ago and discovered that Edmonton has a 10-year plan to get 3,000 homeless people off the streets. And they're way ahead of schedule. I think they're at the 2,000 mark now.
Yeah.
See,
wonderful stuff.
You know, the point of the film is to create a dialogue. And we can't just, you know, Elena and myself, we're just two people, right? We need the help of the public. And people need to start asking their, you know, the politicians in their communities to start doing something. Because if, you know, people don't start talking and creating a bit of an uproar, I guess, you know, it's just going to continue to go on as it is, right?
Absolutely. And Elena, earlier you talked about finding roommates. Mm-hmm. This is something I'm agreeing with, that this is becoming a common practice. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, you may not want to live with someone else. You may be a person who needs to live on your own.
That's right.
You may be forced to move in with people you really don't know a lot about them just to have a roof over your head.
In lots of situations, you are going to be living with someone you don't know. So
exactly. You're not sure what their history is, what their past is, but in order to survive, you're bringing them in. And we have a clip.
I faced eviction about 2 months ago. The landlord said he wanted more money. And I didn't pay some of the rent because like, the other people I couldn't collect off, so I was behind. But he didn't tell me the real reason, then I found out he wanted to make a parking lot out of it. It's just a flat piece of ground.
So here we have two issues for this man becoming homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he had roommates that couldn't afford to give him the money or refused to. We don't know the circumstances. And then number two, the landlord was... I guess, going to raise the house to the ground and build a parking lot. When I saw the film, I thought, well, there's your entrepreneurial spirit. You'll make a lot more money on this house per month as a parking lot. How many cars can you put in that space and rent out to people per month than getting rent from somebody?
That's the market.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when we talked to Big Jim about this, he told us that the house wasn't up to code as it was. Mm-hmm. So he was kind of living in a subpar condition. And, you know, as many of us who rent know, the landlord wants his money in a lump sum, right? Like, it doesn't matter to the landlord whether one person can pay or cannot pay, right? If you're not paying all the rent, everybody's going to, you know, in most cases get booted. So, yeah, there's a number of problems with that. And especially if you don't know these other people you're living with, how are you supposed to collect off them?
Right. And if social services has my name on the lease, and I've got to bring people in I'm not fully aware of, and I don't necessarily even trust them, but I have no choice, I'm still going to be responsible because my name is on the lease.
Everybody's responsible.
But yeah, you're right. Jim was absolutely on the hook for that. And there was actually damages caused to the place. I don't think that they were significant at all, but they claimed for the security deposit after he moved out. And so even though he didn't cause a damage because his name is on there, he has, it's shown as an overpayment. So he's losing over $60 a month from his very small amount of money that he gets from social assistance. So,
right. Just because of his roommates.
Right.
And Jim is somebody that I know quite well. He's a longtime volunteer at Carmichael and just a wonderful friend. And he says in the video, I have a big heart. I'll give until it hurts sometimes. And I think in this particular situation, that's what happened. These were people that he knew needed a place, and he trusted them, and he let them stay there. And, well, that's how it ended, you know. It didn't end well.
And when we're talking about government intervention, if you want to set up clip four, Jim, you know, you mentioned that there seems to be some advocacy from the city, but that mainly the provincial government seems to. I mean, this is just before the election. This is something that we need to think about.
Yeah,
what's happening with our elected officials? What are their plans for housing for those people on assistance or those people living at that edge? You know, and up just above or just around the poverty line, because not everybody on assistance. It's not just about them. It's about people who are making minimum wage, who can't afford to rent.
Very true.
I really believe government housing is really important to come in and to help these people. Let's house them. Let's take care of them. Let's put them in great places. I mean, we'd love to sit down with the government and explain what we feel would be a good house to be built for people, and they can manage them.
I mean, the obvious solution is to build more affordable housing, to build social housing where it's needed. And to ensure that people can, you know, have a home in which they can raise family.
Do you think that people who don't live on minimum wage, people in our society who are comfortable and who own their own homes or rent in a home that they can afford without any problems, do you think they really care about this? Do you think it's an issue that they think about in election time?
I'm not sure they think about it, but on an everyday basis. But the fact of the matter is, if you're paying taxes, you should be thinking about this, right? Because, you know, if we put the money in now and we spend the money to build more affordable housing, you're going to see that, for one, you're going to get more productive people, and you're not going to be paying for these people to stay in shelters or, you know, in the hospital and jails, etc. So in the long run, we all win, right? So.
Yes, I think it is a win-win situation.
I just want to say particularly, because my position is now funded through the Saskatchewan's HIV strategy, it is, housing is one of the top main social determinants of health. And there's so many studies suggesting that people's health, their education, their ability to live a good life is improved so drastically just by that one thing, having a place that they know that they're going to be safe and warm and that they can go home to. And especially, you know, people living with HIV AIDS, their health is so much improved. You know, they are able to stick with taking their antiretroviral medication, and they do so much better. Their mortality rates just plummet when they get into good housing, and it absolutely is something that's so important.
It's something that, you know, it's important for children to be housed, okay? Because this comes back to a book that I read called Freakonomics, dealing with if you deal with children when they're young, okay, and you bring them up well, you're gonna find that when they become adult teenagers, young adults, the crime, you know, first of all, they're going to want to get an education, they're going to want to succeed at life. They're not going to get into crime, criminal activities. They're going to stay on the right path. You know, if you put them in a situation where they're homeless, they have to live day by day instead of planning their future, you're going to find that these kids are going to get into, maybe, I'm not saying that all of them will, but you're putting them in a position where they could easily be influenced by criminal activity or whatever. So,
well, there's a lack of trust. And there's a lack of sense of security when a child is moving constantly, mm-hmm. when a child doesn't have that sense of having my own bedroom or my own space at home or my going to my bathroom where I have privacy, you know, being able to sit with mom or dad in the kitchen and, you know, help make supper, just having that own space. Yes, you're absolutely right. And that's backed up by research.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we don't deal with this problem now in a few years, you know, 10 years or whatever, we could, you know, we could see the crime rate go up, right?
We will be dealing with the outcome. Elena, earlier you talked about you were working on housing for people with HIV. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding we currently have an apartment complex, an apartment building with about a dozen suites in it for people with HIV. Is this still available, or is there new housing, or is because of the incidence of HIV is rising, we need new housing? What's that about?
Well, yeah, there has been in the past housing that's dedicated to people living with HIV/AIDS. The way it exists right now is a little bit tenuous. I'm not 100% sure what's happening there. I'm quite new to this position and to the whole kind of other aspect of housing as part of HIV/AIDS. I've been doing just sort of housing for the last little while, so this is some kind of a new world to me. But what we want to do, and this is kind of my task for the next little while, is going and actually finding units that we can ask to be dedicated units that we can put people into that are living with HIV/AIDS and that we can offer some fairly strong supports to, visiting them, making sure that that their health is doing okay. And
how is that different from housing for people with other types of illnesses?
Well, they have particularly if they're living in substandard housing, it can really affect their health because their immune system is obviously compromised, and so it makes a huge difference to them. Also, making sure that they're living in a place where they can have access to the health care that they need. So there are some special considerations. What this is right now is sort of like a pilot pilot project. We've received funding for 3 years right now to be offering this service, and for the first year, the goal is to work with 5 individuals and just see how we can get the system figured out. And so we'll kind of see how we go. I'm learning a lot. It's a steep curve.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand that. I've been there myself. And I imagine it's been a steep curve for you too, Riley, after doing this film. What's been the learning curve for you?
Well, I mean, I learned a lot by doing the film. You know, being put in a situation where I'm not sure what I'm going to be filming day to day. You know, I could be filming in a house filled with needles and having the cops come and check on us late into the evening. That's another story. I could be filming professionals, you know, all sorts of different types of people, and you have to be on your toes. You have to have the appropriate questions. You have to know how to structure a film so that it tells the story you want it to tell. As a young filmmaker, a young documentarian, I think that this was very, very good for my career. I think that and it'll definitely, hopefully, lead to some more stuff for me as far as documentary filmmaking goes.
Do you plan on doing any more type of social activism documentaries?
Well,
this something that
my company, Living Sky Media, is fairly young. We're trying to expand and grow, and most of being that we're young filmmakers, we have to do some commercial work and stuff like that to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
For this film, the U of R Community Research Group gave us a bit of a subsidy to do it. Now, I spent about, you know, a good month to 2 months of my time making the film, and just the amount of money was, you know, it's not enough to really live on, so there'd have to be some additional funds in it for me, but not sure. Yeah, I would love to, definitely.
Okay. Let's listen to one last clip,
sure.
And then we'll talk about that. And then I have another announcement to make before we say goodbye. And that would be number 6, Jim.
We as elected officials and as researchers need to take the evidence and put it into practice. And I think that we've waited too long, and it's time. It's time is now, that these are real people's lives that we're dealing with. And it's not humane, and it's not cost-effective.
How can people find your film so that they can watch it as well?
It's on Carmichael Outreach's website, carmichaeloutreach.org.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find it on Vimeo, which is a fantastic tool for filmmakers. It's like YouTube.
Okay.
I can track the stats, so I can see how many people are loading the film. I can see how many people are playing it, and from what part of the country or the world they're watching it from. So if you go to www.vimeo.com, vimeo.com/livingskymedia, it will be right at the top of the list. So
okay.
You can see it there, and there's also a longer form link, but it might be kind of confusing for the viewer or the listener. So,
okay, Elena, before we close the show, what would you like to say to the listeners? What would you like to say to our elected officials? Let's close off with you.
Yeah. Well, that last clip you played, that's Mark Spooner again. And we included that at the end of the film because it was a wonderful call to action. We can't just sit back and say, well, you know, the market's going to take care of this. That's not a good enough answer, in my opinion, and I think in more and more people's opinion. The market isn't going to take care of it, and it's not fair to put the entire onus on them to do so.
the market prices are high right now, and the rental market is tight. With a vacancy rate at 0.7%, they can afford to choose who they want to rent to. And that means that a lot of people are going to be left out of the private rental market. So the onus is absolutely on the government to provide social housing, whether that's their own housing or whether that's in forms of subsidies to existing housing providers who are doing a wonderful job, but they just have enough units either. Okay. So that's the main thing. Okay. We need more, and it needs to happen soon.
Thank you both for being on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Okay. And before we leave, I'd like to refer back to something that occurred earlier this spring and something we've talked about a number of times on Human Rights Radio, and that was the walk from Beauval, Saskatchewan, Pinehouse and Beauval against nuclear waste management. And I have an announcement to make that at this particular time, with the help of organizations and individuals across the province, the Committee for Future Generations has collected over 10,000 signatures from citizens of Saskatchewan petitioning the government to legislate a ban on nuclear waste. Now, this 10,000 signatures is in addition to the 5,000 signatures submitted by the Coalition for Clean Green Saskatchewan last April. So currently we have at least 15,000 signatures from citizens of Saskatchewan asking the government to put a ban on nuclear waste in our province. And this is, as far as I can tell, hasn't really been an election issue at all. It has not been made public. Mm-hmm. So this might be something that we want to consider when we're talking to our officials before our election. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jim, and thank you for joining us today on Human Rights Radio.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations, visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca or check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."